So we're going to move forward in the Gemara now on...
you're recording. Great.
Yeah. On Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis at the two dots towards the top. We'll first go through this Gemara, and then we'll focus on a couple of lines in this Gemara that are particularly significant, even in a practical way, or they may or may not be significant in a practical way, depending on how we paskin. So that's our plan for today. And do we have a volunteer to start us off with the Gemara? Okay, go for it. Sorry.
So what it's going to teach us, since it says send the mother, and then you should take the sons for yourself. So it might be possible that, okay, perhaps you should go into the mountains and valleys to find a nest. Halalomar. But
now
it comes to teach us
ki kara
b'ma'ora, that it should
have
to do these things.
Right,
b'ma'ora lefanecha. Yeah.
Right, if it comes across in front of you, then you have this mitzvah, but you don't need to go around looking for it. Why might I have thought that? What was the havamina?
Because shalach to shalach. It sounds like it's something that you should really actively go after.
Right, and Rashi says that. So take a look at Rashi Hachi Garsinan. The end of the first skinny line. And then the next Rashi is the response. Right, only if it happens, you have a mitzvah. There's no requirement that you go around looking to do the mitzvah, and we'll get back to this in a few minutes. Once we get through the Gemara, we'll see how we actually, how the Rishonim and Poskim actually deal with this issue. Is it really true that you don't need to go looking at all for doing this mitzvah? Okay, and now we're still in a Tanur Rabbanan, we're still in a Braisa, right? So we're going to move on to the next parts of the Pasuk and how they're darshaned over there. So this will, the next line will not have anything necessarily to do with what we had until now. Okay, do you want to keep going?
Yeah, sure. Khan, so the word Khan, we call Makom in any case.
Okay, what does that mean?
Rashi says that even if it's just one bra or one pizza, right?
Right, any Khan, right? A minimal nest with only one item inside still counts, okay?
Mm-hmm. Tzipor, Tahor below Tomato.
Right, and Rashi notes that later on in the Gemara, there's a whole long discussion. We're going to prove this, that Tzipor always is a kosher bird. Fine, we don't need to get into that now. We'll do that probably tomorrow. Okay.
All right. So from we learn darach So where do we learn from in the trees? From the lomar, because it says in the Pasuk, B'chol Eitz. So in pits, trenches, and caves, from where do you learn that? Tam Lomar, Ala Aretz.
Right, so when we take Ala Aretz, not like on the ground, but also sort of Ala Aretz can also mean underground or something like that, or on dirt that's dug out. And just everyone pronounces this wrong, so I'll just throw it out there. That's Shechin. So that's literally everyone says that wrong. So it's good to know. Okay, right. So what have we included so far? Based on these drushos, where can the nest be?
Pretty much anywhere.
Pretty much anywhere, right? Private property, public property, in a tree, underground, basically anywhere. Okay.
The female harshes of anywhere about kol devar lefanecha b'derech lefanecha. So if and then we're going to be including. Including everything.
Lamali
Lomar. So then why do you have to say
Lefanecha
b'darach?
Right, well, Lamali, right? And then the answer is Lomar
l'cha. Lomar l'cha, ma darach she'in kanu v'yadacha, akol she'in kanu v'yadacha. So just like a darach, path is not something that's acquired by your hand, I guess.
Right, meaning a path is, you run into something on the path. It's out there. It's not something you possess already, right? It's b'darach. It's out there.
Right, so then, so too with this, and, it's something that's not, possessed by you, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Yoni Shomech, or like a dove from the dove coat, or one from the attic, I guess.
Meaning they started off in your, right, sort of domesticated in your dove coat, your birdhouse for doves, or in your attic or something like that, right? But then what happened? Shekinu
b'tfichinu v'biros. Okay, so then it made its nest somewhere else, in other places.
Right, read Rashi on what those are exactly.
Yeah. Tfichinu shenotnim v'an p'tero tanot v'cham v'karim v'vivosh. That they put small pots into the walls, and they're called something in French.
right, but they would hang out in these little pots in the walls or whatever that is, yeah, right. And biros.
I guess like little apartments, so to say, inside of a tower of a city.
Mm-hmm. Right, but they're not, the point is they're not, it's not your house, it's not inside a domestic space per se, it's sort of adjacent to that. So they've settled sort of near you, but not exactly on your property. So those cases, as well as?
And geese and, you know, hens that made their nests inside of pardes. Pardes being, what's it again? Vineyard?
An orchard,
yeah. So you're fine to send them. Aval kanu b'toch habayit, but if he made its nest inside of a house, the kanyoni and darsio, and also yoni darsio, which are more domesticated birds, right?
Yes, and the Gemara below is going to define those, so we'll see that later. Yeah?
Okay, Pato Mishiwa. So those are Pato Mishiwa.
Right. And do we recognize these Yone Hardasios at all from anywhere?
Yeah, we heard that before. In the
Mishnah. Yeah, they were in the Mishnah, right? And where did the Mishnah learn it out from? What category excluded that? Mizuman. Okay, this is a little weird, right? Because the Mishnah excluded it based on Mizuman. What category is it excluded from here? Right, what drasha?
Baderech,
as opposed to biyadcha. So we're using different terms, but we're excluding the same thing. So the Gemara is going to pick up on this problem. But I think you've done your time. Sorry. So great job. And okay, do we have another volunteer? Right, that was the Braisa, the Braisa that the Gemara quoted. And now we're going to analyze it a bit further. Any volunteers? Go for it.
Amar Mar, Shein Kanu Biyadefa, Akol, Shein Kanu Biyadefa, Halamali, Lichi. Okay, so we have like, we're repeating the drasha that we said before, like Mar said, Madarach, like the same way that like a Darach isn't like you're not possessing it, like anything. That you're not. Why do I need to know this? And it says the Theokrain Nafka, we derive it from Ki Kare, Prat Lemizuman, which comes to exclude anything that like you have in a pod. The Lipanecha Lamali. So then why do we need the Drasha? Why do we need like the Pasuk, the word of the Pasuk of Lipanecha?
Right, so we're asking two separate questions here, right? Number one, why do we need Derech to exclude Biyancha and therefore these domesticated birds, number one. And number two, why do we need Lefanecha? Right? We didn't really explain why we need Lefanecha. We said Lefanecha b'rishus hayachid, but then we ended up saying everything else. So we seem to have at least two extraneous terms.
Ela Lefanecha, la tuye shayu Lefanecha umardu. Lefanecha comes to explain that they were before you, but then they rebelled. Badarah, and then now we're going
to
explain Badarah.
Meaning, I'm right, just to flesh that out, right, so you might have thought, since they used to be yours, right? They used to live in your house, and now they ran away. Maybe you're still Pater, right? But the answer is, and we saw this really previously, but now we learn it. Now we know the source that if they run away, if they really fly away, they sort of, they don't become yours anymore, and then the mitzvah would take effect if you find them, but not if they're hektish, right? Okay. Yeah.
If you find like a nest in the sea or chayav, shena marakwa kamar Hashem hanotin bayam derech, because we bring the pasuk of hanotin bayam derech, and I guess like you have the word derech So it matches.
Right, up. The ocean, the sea is called derech. So this counts as a derech. So you should be chayav in shiluch hakeinari. Rashi explains exactly what the scenario is here. It's a little odd, right? Kan bayam.
Kan bayam.
Or kain bayam. Yeah.
So you have like the sea washed over a tree, and like the nest was perched on top, and therefore you would be chayav because yam is also called derech.
Great, yeah.
And then okay, the gomer elamata matzak kain b'shamayim. But if you find a nest in the sky, dichtiv derech nesher b'shamayim, because we have the pasuk that says derech nesher b'shamayim, so it's also called the derech. So therefore, maybe if you find a nest in the
Shemayim,
you'd also be chayav because of like the derech drasha.
Right,
hachinami. Hachinami, the mechayav, you'd also be chayav. Derech nesher, ikri, deres, stama, lo ikri, but wait, we have like a little problem here. Because it says like derech nesher, which is like specific to like a nesher. It's not like derech in like the general sense of it.
Right, it's only a road for eagles. Not for other beings, not for humans. So it doesn't count as derech. So therefore, what? What do we conclude? That's a new thing already. The amrilei. Yeah. So what do we conclude about?
So then derech b'shamayim, we wouldn't be chayav because right. It's only derech nesher, not stamah.
Right. And look at Rashi. What's the scenario here of a kain b'shamayim?
Kain b'shamayim. Oh no, say a kain ba'avir. It's carried on its back. Sky.
Right, somehow a bird's carrying this nest. So, right, it's not really so stable. But fine, in such a case, you're putter. Okay, so now we're going to ask one more scenario here.
Okay. Amrilei, how do you put
papunai?
Papunai, or ramlamna, matak kinder or shoshel adamahu. If you find a nest in the head of a person, what is it? Amar vadama al rosho. Vadama al rosho. And they bring the pasuk, vadama al rosho. Meaning that, like, you would be chayav?
Yeah, v'adama, right? So it means adama, dirt. He has dirt on his head. Right, just talking about the scenario. He has dirt on his head. Rashi spells out what we learn out from this pasuk.
V'adama rosho. Apal pi shehayav rosho lo avda et et shema. Shema mina. Shema mina adam gufe adamahu midalo avda et
right, so Rashi is making a distinction, a linguistic distinction between Adama and Afar, right? Or what we might say the difference between dirt and the ground, right? It's still called Adama. It's still called the ground despite being on his head. It doesn't become dirt. And that means, now Rashi throws in there that Adam Gufe Adamahu, right? Because humans are dirt, why would humans be dirt? Right, or I think the more precise pasuk given Rashi's distinction is right, afar min ha'adama. That's right. Hashem took dirt from the ground, or ground from the ground, or whatever it is. But it's adama, right? Adam, and that's why he's called Adam, right? Comes from adama. So we're still us humans are still considered dirt, and that's why a dirt on a human, right? Min b'mino enu chotzeitz or something like that. We don't block between the ground and the dirt. So if you have dirt on your head, then it still counts as dirt and still the ground, or it still counts as ground, I should say. And therefore, if you have a kan, tzipor, on it, right, you have your nest on there, you are chayiv in such a case, right? Because this pasuk teaches us it still counts as adama, which would mean, right, it's not, meaning that's how you know it's not avir, right? Where do you draw the line between a nest in the air and a nest on the ground? So humans aren't chotzeitz, but presumably something else would be. Like if you had, you had a plastic, a swing set, let's say, right? You have a plastic swing set. It's not considered mechubar lekarka or whatever. What? Well, that the Gemara will get to that. So that we'll put on hold. But right, but let's say you have a plastic swing set. Maybe I didn't look into how people are passing on this. But you might argue that if it doesn't count as connected to the ground and it's not, it's not adama, right? Something else. That would count as being in the avir, and then you're pater. That's what would seem to be implied by this sugya. But I guess we could look into that more if we want to. If I get more halacha maisa, if it's practical for someone, that would be a good idea to like look in the area if we find any
field trip.
Yeah, field trip. But whether we have to or not, that we'll get to in a few minutes. So yeah, okay. And yeah, so that's the story there, right? So how do we conclude? We have. In the yam, it counts as derech, So you have to do it in the sky. It's not, right? Shamayim, you're pater, but Adama al Rosho, meaning if it's on a person, then you're chayev as well. Okay, so that's how we conclude there. And now do we have another volunteer to take the last few lines? The Agada here? Yeah?
I'll give it my best shot. So, sorry, I'm just finding the place. So, Moshe Minotora Minayin. Bishagam Hubasar. So, I guess it's saying like literally the question means like, where do we find Moshe in the Torah? But it obviously doesn't mean like, what Psukim mentioned Moshe.
Right, it's sort of a joke, right? Yeah. Obviously, Moshe isn't, like, Moshe wrote the Torah, is in the Torah, right? So it's a joke, but what is the question,
so
right?
Rashi fills in that we're asking about when we find out about Moshe's passing, correct? Like, before, like, it's anticipated in...
Right, anticipation. Where's the Rashi?
Bishagam Hu.
Yeah, Bishagam Hu.
Bishagam Hu, Bigamatria Kimo Moshe. So in Gematria, the word Bishagam is like Moshe.
Right. You do the math, right? It's you have a shin, so that's 300, and then 45, right? Mem shin hey, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then it says v'kativ v'kativ shem v'hayu sorry v'kativ sham v'hayu yamav mea be'esrim shana. So it says in the pasuk, if you read the full pasuk, which I'll just find down here, it's really small.
Right, it's in the Mabul, right around the time of the Mabul, and Hashem says lo yadon. You have it?
Okay, sorry. It's really small down here, so I'm...
Okay, lo yadon ruchiva adam leodam bishagam hu vasar. Ve'ayu yamav me'avesrim shana. Right?
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
So...
My spirit will no longer something manifest in humanity in that he's flesh, and his days shall be 120 years.
Yeah.
So that's... What does that have to do with Moshe?
So... So then it says, so that quote, which is from the end of the pasuk, so these are the days that Moshe lived, meaning Moshe lived for 120 years. So I guess, is that, I mean, I should have looked this up, but is that like a reference to the later pasukim with Moshe? He uses the word... Is it saying it uses the word Shagam in those?
The word Bishagam does not recur with Moshe, but so the gematria of Bishagam, which is the same as that of Moshe, that's the, right, in Pshat, it's Bishagam, right?
Oh,
in
okay.
That still, or also. Right, that's Pshat would mean. But the we're darshing here that the gematria is the same as Moshe, and it's like a double coincidence, right? Number one, the gematria is the same. Number two, the years are the same. And as you sort of mentioned, right, this is anticipatory. It's not... Right, Moshe's all over the Torah, but you wouldn't have expected Moshe in the story of the Mabul, right? It's not doesn't chronologically make sense. That's the point. It's a hint. It's anticipation of Moshe from the Torah. By the way, who's asking this question? Moshe min HaTorah Minayin. Who's giving the answer? Bishagam hu vasar.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Well,
Masna. Right. So it seems the question comes from the Papunai, and right, which. Presumably, it was a group of students or something like that, and Rav Masna answers it, right? Okay. That's why this is connected, at least the Pshat reason of why this is connected. It's they had a few questions to ask. They had some questions about, Shiloh HaKain with dirt on a person's head, and then they had some questions about where's Moshe in the Torah. You can tell these students were having a good time, right?
There. I thought it was kind of like a rhetorical. Do you read it as like it's a rhetorical question, or it's like. It's like, oh, where do we find Moshe? Should we find it here? Or is it like one person's asking the other?
Well, it can't be. I mean, it depends on me. But like, it can't be a sincere question of where is Moshe in the Torah, right? That's obviously not a sincere question, right? If it's a question, it could be, you could say it's a sincere question of what hints are there to Moshe before Moshe is born in the Torah, although it sounds like the length, it doesn't really quite flesh that out. That's clearly what the answer is,
right?
But the question, you can wonder how serious was the question, how was it meant. But we'll look at have another approach in a minute, a more drash oriented approach. But that's question and answer number one of this Agada, right? Where's Moshe in the Torah? Bishagam hu vasar. And as Rashi points out here, and with all the other cases, it's not just that the gematria is the same. That's the surface comparison. But also, there's a deeper point that this 120, he lives to 120. That's in the pasuk, and that shows that Moshe was anticipated by Hashem. It's also talking about human failure, and Moshe is a great person. You can darshan it more if you wanted to, and many have. Okay, so let's keep going.
Haman in the Torah, Minayin. So where do we find Haman in the Torah? Hamin ha'etz. I think the word in the Torah was actually hamin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it says here, Vayomer mihi gidlach ki erom ata hamin ha'etz asher tivitcha lebilti aval mimenu. Achal mimenu achalta.
Right. Mi amar lemi.
I forgot who it was said to. I think Hashem said it.
So this is. Right, Hashem says, who told you you were naked, right? Do you eat this tree, from this tree? So, Hamin ha'etz, from this tree, that Hashem says that to Adam. And what's the connection to Haman?
Because it says the word Hamin ha'etz, and like, Haman is like...
Right, Haman, it's the same letters, Haman,
eitz,
Hamin.
Because Haman was Rashi says, Tamoy ba'etz, he was
right.
Son.
Great, right, so that's Rashi adds the connection, that not obvious, you know, Hamanites, right? We all know Haman was hanged on a tree. So that's a second level of connection. Okay, next.
Esther min haTorah minayin. So where do we get Esther from the Torah? We get it from the pasuk, Vanochi Hester Astir. So I'll just actually read the full pasuk. It says, Vanochi Hester Astir panai biyom hagu al kol habra'a asher asa ki pana el elim machirin. So saying, I will surely turn my face from you on this day. Because you have turned your face to other gods.
Right, and this is what's known as Hester Panim, right? Hashem, hiding Hashem's face as a way of punishing the Jewish people. How does Rashi connect it beyond just Haster, Astir, beyond just the assonance? What else is there?
Pasuk is talking about sad, like bad things, and it says the word bad, or ra, I forget.
Mm-hmm. So what does Rashi say? Yeah.
Esther, bad things happen to her, right?
Right. He says, Bimei Esther, Hester Panim, right? Esther will be a time of Hashem's face being hidden because the Jews are almost destroyed. And he quotes the rest of that pasuk, or the previous pasuk, Umtza'uhu, the pasuk is, Umtza'uhu ra'os rabos v'tzaros. Rashi says, Umtza'uhu tzaros rabos v'ra'os. These many and horrible things will find the Jewish people at that time. Meaning just like Hester Panim, right? Just like the idea, this is right before Hazinu, this prediction that in the future, the Jews will sin and they'll be punished. That happens in Esther's time, and there's Hester Panim there too. So it's not just the play on words, it's also the larger context. And now the final case.
Mordechai min haTorah minayin. Where do you find Mordechai in the Torah? Dichtiv Mar Daror, Miturgamon Mar Dechi, which is Mordechai.
So what's Mar Daror, first of all?
So it was in the Pasuk. I'm trying to find it. Okay, Batav Kachlach Bashamayim.
Bisamim?
Sorry, Abasimim Rosh. Mar Daror Chamesh Meos Ve Hinaman. Sorry, these are really small letters.
Right, and some numbers of different yeah. things. So, what's kinamon?
Cinnamon,
right? Comes from there. And what's more? What is more? More deror.
Myrrh,
right? So that's we know where these words come from. They come from the psukim, or at least they're correlated somehow. So more deror means like free myrrh. Okay. How do we translate that? We translate that mira dachya. So what's mira? Myrrh, right? Same word. Just, everyone not good at coming up with new words. And what's dachya? So that's interesting. That is the similar letters, but I think in Aramaic, dachya means pure or. But yeah, that's tzach. And I think also that's more reasonable for a parallel to dror. But that's an interesting idea that it could be crushed. I'm just not sure that works in Aramaic. But we translate mira dachya, pure myrrh. Okay, and what does that sound like?
Mordechai.
Right, Miradachia, Mordechai. And what does Rashi add?
Rashi adds, Bekarle Rosh Lubishamayim.
The Besamim.
Besamim.
Right, Besamim, Kachlecha Besamim Rosh. That's
that
me in the
Pasuk. That makes a lot more sense. I was wondering how that connected. The Tzadikim Ve Anshe Knesset Agadola. So I guess the people who... I wasn't sure exactly how this connected because I also didn't fully understand that it was besamim, but I guess this idea of maybe the myrrh was brought by the tzaddikim and the anshei knesset, or
well, imshat, right? Kachla besamim rosh means I don't know, the head of the besamim, these top spices. But the drasha is, the implication is, right? If you're going to call someone besamim rosh, That means they're Rosh L'Besamim. They're the head of all the good-smelling things. They're the leader. The leader of the leaders. And that's Mordechai, who was the head of the Tzadikim and the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. So that's how we take it there. So it's, again, not just the wordplay, but there's another level that Rashi brings out. So good shkoch to everyone on reading. I'll just add on this Agadita a couple of interesting points. First of all, any questions? People have any questions on this Agadita, which may or may not lead to the points? Yeah, Tamar.
I find it interesting that they hint to Esther through bad stuff happened to Esther, which if you're asking me to recall what's a fact about Esther, then I wouldn't immediately be like, oh, bad things happened to her. And we usually remember the end of her story, the good stuff.
Right, well, that's a fair point. It's a different focus than what we usually think about,
yeah,
right?
And even for Mordechai, it says he was the leader. I don't know, it sounds pretty positive there. So, I don't know, it's interesting that...
Esther is the negative and Mordechai is the positive, especially because Esther is the one who actually precipitates the...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sure someone could develop a theme there. Yeah, Hannah.
I guess you have Hamlet and Mordechai and Esther, which seem a pretty solid mix, but why Moshe is thrown in there,
it seems interesting. It's odd for a few reasons. First of all, Moshe is in the Torah, right, as we said, so it doesn't really work. And then also, right, he's not tied to the story, so why do we get three people from the Purim story and just one Moshe? Yeah.
Is there any connection between, with Esther, perfumes and stuff, but the family connection to,
that's interesting, right? We always, right, we talk so much in the Megillah about Esther having spices, and now all of a sudden Mordechai is the one who's the Besamim Rosh. Interesting thematic connection there. I mean, I don't think Rashi's saying it, but I think that could be what the Gemara is, at least part of what the Gemara is getting at, throwing that connection between Mordechai and Esther. Yeah.
Are there any other sources for this in the Gemara, or this is where it's from?
This is the, whenever on Purim time, every time everyone quotes this, it's from here.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why we're learning this parak. That's not one. But,
Another question I would have is, these people are all mentioned enough. Why do we have to have them in the Torah also?
Why is there this assumption that they need to be in the Torah?
Why don't we have everyone enough mentioned in the Torah?
So why these four people, right? I think a couple of sides of that is one important question that that some of the Mefarshim talk about. And the other question that we touched on a bit is the question of what's the relationship between the sugya and here and this agadita, other than the fact that Papunai asked Rav Masna. Is there any other connection? Are there questions from the computer? Or is everyone good on that front? Okay. So I'll just share a couple of points that some of the Achronim talk about. So one is the Maharal tries to draw a connection between the sugya, the last thing we talked about in the Gemara, which is Adama al Rosho, right? The does it count if you have dirt on a person's head? Does that count as the ground and you're chayv in Shiloh HaKain, or does that count as the sky and you're putter? So the Maharal says that's connected directly to this point, because what does it mean that, right, as Rashi said, if you have dirt on your head, that counts as the ground? Why? Shma mina adam gufe adamahu. A person counts as adama. Because the question really wasn't just what's the status of the dirt on a person's head? It was, what's the nature of humanity? Are people dirt, chomer, physical matter, or are people spiritual beings? Right? And I think we generally think there's some sort of mix. But the question is, what's the dominant factor? What are we, by definition, are we humans dirt or are we spirit? And the answer was, that's what it sounded like at least, we're Adama. We're also considered Adama, so it's not a chatzitza, so you're chayv in Shiloh HaKain. Okay, if so, Moshe min HaTorah minayin. How can people, mere chomer, mere physicality, have access to Torah and to spirituality and Hashem? Even Moshe, even the greatest of all people, the most spiritual of all people, still, at the end of the day, he's Adama. He has no access to anything beyond that. And that's the drasha of Bishagam hu basar, right? That Bishagam not only adds up to Moshe, but Bishagam hu basar, we are flesh, we are physical, and yet we still have this capacity to be part of Torah to connect to Hashem as Moshe did. So that overcomes that objection. Then the question is, okay, that's true about Moshe, but what about someone like Haman? What about, go to the opposite extreme, right? Pick your favorite Russia. Maybe Bilam would have been slightly closer, but Haman's good, a good candidate for major Russia, and can he be part of the Torah too? And the answer is, yes, by someone doing certain averos, that's also relevant to Torah. Torah doesn't only deal with spiritual, you know, the spiritual elite. It deals with everyone, and even a great Russia like Haman also has a place in the Torah. So that's, and then once we mention Haman, you can't leave out the other people in the story, so that they get included as well. So that last piece is maybe a little weaker than the rest, but it's a very interesting reflection on how the Gemara, the two parts of the Gemara connect together, right? And not just that the Talmidim were having a good time asking random questions, but that there's a deep connection here. We're asking questions about fundamental human nature. So that's the Maharal. The Maharsha is more focused on why Dafka these four characters. And, right, like, you could ask everyone in Tanakh, right? Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Min HaTorah, Minah. Why these four? And his take is, and this works well for three, one of them less so, but these names are unusual names, right? For multiple reasons. First of all four of these characters have alternate names, right? Moshe is called Avigdor, Esther is Hadassah, Haman is Memuchan, Mordechai is, right, Mordechai Bilshan. So all these people have other names, and how do we know that this is their real name? And especially given that these names are a little unusual, right? First of all, Moshe, where does Moshe come from? Ki min ha-mayim yishisihu. I drew him from the water, right? If it was in America, his name would have been Drew. So like, that's a weird name, right? Why should that be the name that Moshe goes by instead of Avigdor or something else? And the Maharsha says both the name of Esther and Mordechai, those seem to be Persian names. And I mean, if you know a little bit about ancient Near Eastern religion, and you've heard of the god Marduk and the goddess Ishtar, those are the same names, right? That's the sort of odd. People have written about this, but it seems like their names actually come from the names of these ancient Near Eastern gods, or they're Persian. At the very least, they're Persian names, as the Maharsha says, and they may even be more unusual than that. So, why are these the names used to describe them? And then that's what we're answering. We ask Min HaTorah Minayin, and then we have a drasha. We show that there's really this deep connection between each one. There's a reason why that's their name. And you know, Mordechai, it's Mira Dachya, and for Esther, it's Haster Aster, and for Moshe, it's Ki Min HaMayim Yishisihu, and Haman Hamina Eitz Hazeh. So it's not Memuchan. Again, less of a challenge there, but just why Haman and not Memuchan. So that's the Maharsha's angle on why we're asking specifically about these characters, why this name and not a different name, and it's less about the person and more about the name. So I thought those were both very interesting approaches here. Yeah.
We think other people have weird names.
That's true.
Can you catch them all?
That's true. Maybe it's not all of them. I mean, these are pretty good candidates. But yeah, you know, you could always ask a question on a good vort. Moshe, right. Is there an alternate etymology for Moshe's name that comes from Egyptian or whatnot? But yeah, that's not the direction the Maharsha goes in.
Right, but then that would fit more nicely with Esther and Mordechai, with these all being maybe non-Hebrew.
Right, names. Go even further. Right, interesting. Okay, you can have like a Maharsha 2.0. Yeah, Nettie.
Yeah, I don't know like who says this, but I remember once hearing in the context of like Purim, the idea that like Haman is compared to like the sin with like the Eitz Hadas, that like Haman was someone who also kind of like had everything, like everyone was bowing down to him, but like he was so like bent up on the fact that Mordechai wouldn't bow down to him, and kind of like similar to Adam's situation in Gan Eden, where like Hashem said you can like literally eat anything, but the fact that there was like that one tree that he couldn't eat from, like that was sort of the cause of the sin. So like kind of comparing the sins.
Nice, nice. Be happy with what you have, and don't fall prey like Haman or Adam. Okay, good. Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, I think Purim time, a lot, you'll notice there's a lot of vortlach on this and a lot of interesting ideas. So, you know, take some now and save it for Purim. And speaking of which, as we move now to our sugya, to some of the other sources on the question of whether there's an obligation to seek the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein, so that's this week's parsha. So that's like very relevant for Dvar Torah material, or Dvar Halacha in this case. So, you know, keep that in mind as we discuss this topic. Very seasonal, right? Who would have thought? No, it worked out well. I mean, there are a lot of mitzvos in, like, Kiseitze, so like, there's like a 50% chance you pick any mitzvah. Yeah, no, it worked out well. But the top, that was not why the topic was chosen. But you could tell yourself that it is, or use it as if it is, if that helps. Okay, so let's jump into this sugya. So we saw in the Gemara there's a drasha. The drasha seems pretty clear. Ki yikare, right? Ki yikare. You might have thought shalech tishalach means yachzor bahar mugvaos. You should go around and try to find it. Kadesh yimtza kain talmud omar ki yikare b'ma'or lefanecha. If it happens in front of you, if you happen across a nest, then you have this mitzvah. There's no reason to go seeking out the mitzvah. That's what it sounds like. And you look at the Mefarshim here, sources 2, 3, and 4. The Nimukhe Yosef, right, he just explains the Gemara. Yachli Yasav Harim Gvos, Achim Sakam Yeshaleach, Shomeani, I would have thought, mitzvah lechazer, achar mitzvah hazos, achetavol yado. You have to hunt down this mitzvah until you get it. And no, bima'ora lekishi yikare, when it happens. When it happens, until that, you don't have to. Again, just saying Pshat in the Gemara, but this is what Pshat in the Gemara implies. The Ran, this Ran we saw last week, the question the Ran had of why isn't it an aseh and a los aseh of Shiluch HaKein to override the los aseh of, or to override the aseh of Uviarta, right, to get rid of this murderous bird. It should be overridden by the aseh and los aseh. And he answers, as we saw, that shiluach again isn't a full aseh and los aseh, because as he says, al shiluach mi have a mitzvah hamutelas alav. That's not an obligation on you. It's not like you wake up in the morning, you have an obligation to do shiluach hakein, right? Harayim lo ratzali kachabanim pater mishaleach. You don't want to send the kids. You don't need to do it. You just don't need to deal with the whole thing. It's not an obligation. So it sounds like, again, there's no obligation to go around and do. If you're in a situation where you're going to be sending away the mother bird, otherwise you're going to be you otherwise would be taking the mother bird. You're taking the eggs. Then you'd need to send away the mother bird. I think either in a future shir, we'll work out some of the mechanics of what exactly the mitzvah is and whatnot on that front. But for our purposes today, the point is it's not a chiyuv. It's that you don't wake up and have a chiyuv to do shiluach hakein. And the Meiri as well, he sort of opens mitzvah shiluach hakein, ena mitzvah sheyitzarech lechazer acharea. Or it's lomar sheyem yimtza lo kein, sheyidol as habanim, kadeh sheyikai mitzvah shiluach, be'em, o sheyichazer achar mitzvah zo bahar mugvos, elo kishiz dam in the yado, yikayim, shnemar ki yikare. Right, it's not a mitzvah you need to go and do. If you happen upon the mitzvah, then you have to do it. But you don't need to seek it out. Seems pretty clear that that's what our Gemara means, or at least that's what you would have thought. But it's going to get more complicated than that. Before we get into some of the alternate positions and important Chavos Yair and others, it's worth taking a bit of a step back and figuring out what is the nature of this mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, meaning outside of whether specifically you have an obligation to hunt it down or not. What do we know about the mitzvah? And there's a few different ways of doing this, what I call Ofi HaMitzvah, the nature of the mitzvah. One way is to look at the Sifrei HaMitzvah and see what they say. So that's very much relevant here. So we'll start with the Rambam. Just looking at the clock. I don't know, we'll see how much, if there's a chance for people to read something. Some sources people will read, otherwise we'll try to move through this. So the Rambam, of course, counts two different mitzvahs, the Aseh and the Los Aseh. We'll start with the lo saaseh, fa mitzvah shin vav hi, shehiz hiranu mikachas kan tzipor, bichlalo be'ez hatzeda. We're prohibited from taking the entire nest at the time of hunting. Ha'em v'habanim, both the mother and children. V'hu amro, lo sigach ha'em al habanim. Don't take the mother along with the children. V'ze halav nitak la'aseh. This prohibition is attached to or becomes an aseh. V'hu amro, shaleach tishalach ha'em. Send away the mother. V'chol zman shliyeh efshar l'shaleach ulekayim aseh sheba. Any case where it's impossible to send away the mother bird and fulfill the aseh kigon shemesa ha'em kodem shiyashalcha loke. Right. So if you take, let's say you take. So in general, lav hanitach l'aseh ein loken alav. Right. We have this rule, a prohibition that becomes a positive commandment. You don't get malkos. Why? Because you never really, well, different ways of understanding it, but one way, you never really finish the prohibition, right? If you steal money, you have an obligation to give it back. So because you keep having that opportunity to pay it back, we don't give you malkos, you don't get lashes as a punishment, because it's not like it's done, right? You have a way of fixing it. There's a different way of rectifying the avera by giving it back rather than having a punishment. So in Shiluach HaKein, same idea, right? If you take, let's say you take the whole nest, as the Rambam said. So what are you supposed to do next? Send away the mother. Okay, it was bad that you took the whole nest, but you can rectify it by sending away the mother. And I was discussing this with a couple people during Seder, even if you traumatize the mother by taking it first, now that you send it away, maybe you're minimizing the trauma somewhat, you know, something
you
like that.
Back and that's in the way, or you took it already and then you went back and you sent the mother, right?
I guess either way, right? I don't think I think it would work either way, but you can still send away the mother, and that's why it's a lava nita klase, right? It was prohibited to take the whole nest, mother and child. Now that you did, you have an ase, you have a positive commandment to send away the mother, and because of that, you don't get malchus. However, as the Rambam continues, right, kol zman shelo yeh efshar l'shaleach l'kayim ase sheba, if there's a scenario where you can't then fulfill the ase, go shemesa aim kodem shiyashalcha loke. If you let, you take the whole, right, the whole nest, and then the mother dies, you can't send it away because dead. So then you get malchus in such a case, right? Because it's no longer nitak le'aseh. The lav is somehow completed. You can't fix it. You can't rectify it. So you get malchus. Fine, and we explain it elsewhere. So that's the aseh. What comes out of? Well, yeah. Sorry, that's the lav, right? So let's talk about the aseh now. Hamitzvah kuf mem ches yishetivanu lishaleach es hakein. The mitzvah is to send away the nest, which is sort of an odd formulation, right? Why not say send away the bird? Okay. Send away the mother and take the kids. Right? And it's explained in Chulin. Well, we know that because we're doing Chulin. We're doing the last parak in Chulin. Okay. So that's the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos. Does anyone have any thoughts on these sources? These are a bit less clear than the ones we're going to look at in a moment, but... You know, it's not. You could read the Rambam in a couple different ways here. A couple different ways. It's not one thing we're going to try to figure out is what exactly is the nature of the aseh. What exactly is the nature of the positive commandment? The next two sources have a bit, clarify what the Rambam seems to have meant. So, source number 7, this is the Hakdama to Hilchos Shechita, or what some call the Koteret or Koseres or whatever, the introductory line. On the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, so usually whenever he has an area of halacha, so he'll tell you what mitzvos are there. Right? The Rambam's master organizer, so he organizes a list of 613 mitzvos, and the Mishnah Torah, every area of halacha, he tells you which mitzvos show up here. Right, that and you can categorize everything that way. So for mitzvah, for Hilchos Shechita, there's 5 mitzvos, right, to shecht before you eat, oso vespino, not to do that, covering blood. And then the last two mitzvos here, underlined, Dalet and Hey, in source 7, Dalet, Shelo Likacha Eim Al Habanim, don't take the mother along with the children, and Hey, L'Shaleacha Eim Im Lakcha Al Habanim, to send away the mother if you did take it along with the kids. Ubir mitzvos Elu B'Prakim Elu. Let me explain this here. So what's a little odd about what the Rambam did there in this header? Yeah? Yeah, it sounds like the aseh only comes about after you did the losa aseh, right? Let's say you wake up in the morning and say, I want to do shiloh hakein. I want to be mekayim the mitzvah aseh shiloh hakein. How do I do that? So, well, the only way to do that is to first do an avera of taking the cane and the babies together and then to send it away, right? So that would, so would you want to do that? Probably you don't want to do that, right? As we were talking about during Seder, that would be part of the... that would be an odd chumrah to have, right? Allah the chumrah song, right? That would be an unusual chumrah to have to try to be, according to what the Rambam's saying here, to send away the mother bird. You're only mekayim aseh if you did a lav first. You don't want to end up in that situation. And in source number 8, the Rambam at the beginning of our parak, of Hilchos Shechita, parak Yigimel, about Shiloh HaKein, the way the Rambam sets it up is very similar to this. Halokeach eim al habanim v'shachta. Did I not do this right? Yeah. Right? If you take the mother with the kids and then you shecht it, you kill the mother, right? That thereby not allowing you to send it away. Habasar motar b'achila, you're allowed to eat the meat, it doesn't become treif. But you get malkos for that because that's a way of violating the law without it becoming an ase, right? Because you can no longer send the mother away. Look, you don't need to kill the mother. Also, if it dies before you send it away, you get malchus. If you first take it and then you send the mother away, you're pater, meaning pater avalasu. You violated the law, but you don't get the punishment of malchus. Any prohibition that's connected that becomes an asay, you need to fulfill the asay. If you don't, you get malchus, right? If you don't, not only you don't, but somehow you can't anymore, you get malchus, right? Like nosar, right? Don't leave food, a carbon meat over until the morning. If you do, you should burn it. If you don't burn it and somehow it disappears, you get malchus. That actually may not be true. There may be more some complications in that case. But in theory, this is the rule that the Rambam is introducing here. So what's very odd about this Rambam? Right? This is the first. These are the first two halachos about Shiluch HaKein. If you were writing, right, pretend you're the Rambam for a second, right, put on the turban and everything. So you're writing Hilchos Shiluch HaKein, Perek Yud Gimel. What do you start with?
If you want to take baby birds, send away the mother
first. Yeah, very simple, right? If you want to, right, like start with the pasuk even, right? You come across birds or you want to take chicks, you want to take eggs, send away the mother, that's a mitzvah, and then that's a mitzvah say. And if you don't, that's a lav, right? The Rambam does it backwards, right? The Rambam says, okay, so you come across this this nest, you take them all, and you shech the mother, that's like super usher, and you get malchus. If you send away the mother, then okay, we'll leave off the malchus. And he never says, there's a mitzvah to send, he sort of says backhanded, in passing, it's a lav and nitek lasei, so you don't get malchus. He doesn't actually say that there's any precept, there's any actual good point in general about sending away the mother bird. And again, this seems consistent with what he has in the Hakdama, right? That there's no real independent mitzvah of sending away the mother bird. It's just, if you mess up, this is the way to mitigate the damage. But there's no mitzvah, I mean, it's on the list of, you know, the 360, whatever, the 248 positive mitzvahs. But it's not really a mitzvah in the sense that you want to do it. It's damage control, right? That's what the Rambam seems to be saying here. It's not fully clear in the Sefer Mitzvos. You look back at Sefer Mitzvos, you can definitely fit this, right? The Rambam on the lav mentions that it's nitach la'aseh, because the lav is where it's really at. The aseh is a way of mitigating. The aseh, he says, you should send away the mother bird. When do you send away the mother bird? He doesn't specify. But based on what we've seen, it sounds like the only mitzvah is after you messed up. After you take the whole group, then you should send away the mother bird to mitigate the damage. Obviously, you can also avoid the problem by sending it away beforehand. That's just not a mitzvah, right? That's avoiding the whole problem. That's not really a kiyum mitzvah. That's what it sounds like based on the Rambam, just reading what the Rambam says. Yeah.
So according to the Rambam, if you see a nest, you just take the kids and like leave in your bed?
So,
or you do have to send away the mother first.
Right, so this is, we'll hopefully get into this either tomorrow or the next day. Or what if you take the kids and not the whole thing? Right? Is that a problem? I think people say it's Asur Darabanan, but not Doraisa, because the Rambam doesn't seem to include it here, right? So, but it is does seem to be Asur, but only Midarabanan. That's the way people understand the Rambam. Yeah. Other questions or thoughts on this, on Shitas HaRambam here, as we're reading it? Okay, and we can contrast the Rambam with, like, everybody else, all the other Monei Mitzvos, right? So if you look, source number 9, he just says, Kazvarash Tetze, Kikari Khan Zipor, Lefnecha, Badera, Play, Tzalar, Tzifrachim, Abitzim, Vem, Revetz, Tzalar, Fachim, Abitzim, .. Shalech, Tzalach, Zemes, Abadim, Tikach, Lach. He just quotes the Psukim. That's the best way to introduce it, because it's the scenario of the Psukim, right? It's relatively straightforward. Sounds like the mitzvah is to send away the mother bird. That's in the Smag. In the Smak, he has a short version of it. L'shaleach hakein. The mitzvah is to send away the nest. Yichsiv shaleach shalach za'im. Send away the mother. That's the mitzvah. Then he goes into some details. No, not mezumin. Not right. He goes into details. But the point is, the mitzvah is to send away the mother bird. Presumably, in a normal scenario, right? Send away the mother bird. Sefer Harei. The mitzvah says l'shaleach aim tzipor min hakein. Shenemar shaleach shalach za'im. Right. This is how the Rambam should have started. If he was understanding the mitzvah the way we've been understanding it until now. You say there's a mitzvah to send away the mother bird in these scenarios. Even the Chinuch, who always takes his cues from the Rambam, his formulation of this mitzvah is very different than the Rambam's. Right? He says explicitly, right? Look at what the Rambam said. The Rambam, even in the Sefer Mitzvahs, which was ambiguous, mitzvah kuf emches yishetivanu l'shaleach es hakein. Very nice and ambiguous. To send away the nest, whatever that means, but fine, presumably that means the mother. The Chinuch says, "L'shaleach ha'aim min hakein," to send the mother away from the nest, "kodem sheyigach habanim," before taking the children. Shemar shleitzach same as habanim tikach lach, like the pasuk said, right? The over alzev ilakach ha'aim ba'oda habanim. If you violate that mitzvah and take the mother while the children are still there, bitel asay zet mivat shavar alav lo sigach ha'aim. You've not only violated the law, you also mid mivatal asay, because you were supposed to send the mother away in the first place. You missed out. So you're mevatel the asay, but you can still do it later. Right? He says, Aval im shilcha, skipping a line, shilcha hu kodem shetamus, if you then send the mother away before it dies, nitkan lave bekach upater. You fixed the lav and your pater. Shazel lav nitaku laasay, elaasay. Fine. But you were, so you first were mevatel an asay, and then you fixed the lav with an asay. That's the chinuch. According to the Rambam, this is not true. According to it would seem, right? You're not mevatel the asay of shiloh hakain. Maybe, well, right? According to the Rambam, it seems like you're not mevatel the asay of shiloh hakain by taking the whole nest, because you've actually made it possible to do the mitzvah. There was no asay opportunity of shiloh hakain until you took the whole nest. Now you took the whole nest, you have an asay opportunity, and it's not a particularly good one. It's damage control, but there's no bitel asay if you take the cane. It's just a lav. That's what it sounds like. I mean, read the Rambam, right? He doesn't say, go to a nest and send away the mother bird. He says, if you go to a nest and take the whole thing, that's really bad. And it's less bad if you then send the mother away. That's the mitzvah of shiloh hakain. That's what it sounds like he says, right? Read the Rambam in both the...
I just thought maybe he didn't want to encourage doing shiloh hakain if you don't want the bird. So he goes into a situation where...
Well, I think you're right. The Rambam doesn't want to encourage it, and also Hashem doesn't want to encourage it, and that's why it's not a mitzvah.
Right?
So that's, I mean, the logic you're saying, take it a couple steps further, and that seems like that's Shitas HaRambam.
What does he do with the Gemara? It doesn't seem to sound like...
Which part of the Gemara?
I don't know, when you happened upon, it doesn't sound like once you already happened upon it, then took it, and then sent it, it seems to be inserting a lot of...
Yeah, it doesn't fit well with the psukim, that's for sure, right? It sounds like the psukim say there's something good about sending away the mother bird. What the Rambam could say is, it's not that it's good to send away the mother, it's if you want to take eggs, the neutral way of doing that is by sending away the mother first. There's no mitzvah there, but you've avoided the lav.
So, if I did shiluach hakein, or hakana, I don't know which one, according to the, before I commit the iser, according to the Rambam, it's a net neutral. It's not.
So it sounds like, this doesn't sound like you're mekayim the asay there, just reading the Rambam.
Why is it a mitzvah to rectify the bad thing if that would also not be good?
Okay, yeah, so that's a fair question, and sometimes we have these mitzvos that are, how to deal with a situation, right? Like burning nosar, or what else is there? Right, there are some mitzvos. What's a mitzvah? It's a commandment. It's directions, right? So sometimes, right, the word mitzvah can mean a commandment, what to do. It can also mean a good thing. So it doesn't always mean both. Sometimes you have mitzvahs that are good things that you're actually not commanded, right? Sometimes you have mitzvahs that are the thing you should do, but they're actually not particularly good. It's damage control. It's not it's a good thing.
I don't see why the Rambam wouldn't apply that then to the taking the nest in the first place. Why is he forced to say that it's only after you've already done the Isser? He could just say, it's not good to do Shiloh HaKan, but it does rectify or prevent the Isser, however he wants to...
Well, you are avoiding the Isser, it's just not a mitzvah.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't think the Rambam has to do this. The Rambam does seem to be going out of his way, which is interesting. But yeah, that's what seems to come out of the Rambam, in contrast to all these other Sifrei HaMitzvah. Nettie, is that a hand?
Yeah, I was wondering, how would the Rambam understand then that, the psukim describe it as, l'man yital v'cha barachta yamin?
Yeah, it is odd. I mean, presumably you would say it's, if you don't mess this up, then you get, right, if you don't torture birds, then you'll live a long life.
It's pretty low bar.
It's it doesn't say it about so many mitzvos, you know what I mean?
In general, that's a question, right? Everyone has to deal with why do you say that, and hopefully, I think that's the plan for our closing share on Thursday, to look at the last Sugya on Kuf Mem Beis Amud Aleph with that Gemara, and some people had a lot of trouble with that. Some people even went OTD because of that pasuk. So stay tuned. But Elisha ben Avuya, spoiler alert. Yeah. I think everyone has to deal with that. It is more odd for the Rambam than everyone else. But you could say for the Rambam that it's damage control rather than or it's avoiding the lav rather than the asay being something good. Yeah. Well, the Rambam, yeah, so it's a little odd, right? The Rambam does say that it's about rachamim, right? He says, we paskin, at least in the Mora, right? The Rambam in the Mora, that it's rachamim, Hashem has mercy on the bird, and we paskin that reason as opposed to the other reason. So that is compatible with what he's saying here, right? Hashem has mercy on the bird, which is why you don't take the nest. It explains the lav. It doesn't explain the asay, because there's not much to explain. The asay is damage control, right? If you do take the nest, it's less bad if you then send away the mother. But actually, I wonder if, I mean, it actually could be that We were talking about this bit the other day. This may be the part of the justification for the Rambam, meaning if the whole point is mercy, so aren't you better off not interfering in the first place? Isn't that being just as merciful, if not more merciful? It could be that partially that question is what leads the Rambam to say that there's no positive value per se in sending away the mother bird. It's just you've avoided like extreme torture. It's only like, you know, it's deferred torture or whatever. That could be what's driving the Rambam.
I also was wondering, just with the Sefer HaChinuch, I don't understand how he starts off by saying, if you don't send away the mother, then you're being over on the Asay. However, if you don't send the mother, then it's fine because then you could also not be over on the Asay.
Yeah, so I think the Chinuch has, according to the Chinuch, the Asay has sort of two lives, right? It applies before you do the Avera. That's the easy way. And then there's, if you do the Avera, it's the hard way. It's interesting to say that, you know, it sounds like he would say, you're mevatel the Asay, but then you do the Asay. So you were like mevatel opportunity number one, even though you did opportunity number two. But
right.
Opportunity number two is not, you know, again, it's not as good if you, that, even according to the, according to everyone, including the Chinuch, if you only do the Asay after you took it, it's not particularly good. It's damage control, right? So you missed out on the good way of doing it. Now you did it in second. It's better than nothing, but it's not particularly good to do it only as the Nitzak Le'asay. Okay, so time is not on our side here. So this is the Monei HaMitzvos about how to count this mitzvah. Again, the standard view seems to be it's actually a mitzvah to send away the mother bird. The Rambam seems to really hold that there's nothing special about that, and the Asay is just mitigating the bad of the Los Asay, but not its own real mitzvah. Okay, but let's look at now at some other indications among Rishonim and Achronim as to the nature of this mitzvah. So Tosvos in Kiddushin, the Gemara says that Shiloh HaKein is a mitzvah Asay Shelo Azman Grama, right? It's not time sensitive in any way. You can send away birds whenever you want. Probably advisable by day, but there's no halachic limitation. And so the question is, Tema the Rebbe, B'chohani k'siv lav. In each of these cases, it mentions a prohibition. And v'shloch ha'ken k'siv lo sikacha e'ma levanim, right? The lav, there's a prohibition tied to the positive commandment. V'im kein, eich yu nashim peturos. Why would women be exempt in the first place, right? We're saying because it's mitzvah she'eshe lo zman grama, women are chayev. But why would they be pater even if it wasn't? Even if it wasn't zman grama. Afil heim zman grama. If it's a lav, women are included. So what's the havamina? Why do we need to include this on the list? There is a way of fulfilling the asay without the lav. How so? Let's say you take the mother, right? You have the nest there, you take the mother, because you want to send her away, right? So you have to pick her up first to send her away. That may or may not be a good excuse. For the Tosfos, it is, right? Pick her up, they're about to send it away. Then you change your mind. You're like, you know what? I'm going to eat this too. So if you did that, dehashta lake alav, ki imasei deshalef tzalach. You didn't violate the law. Right? Why? Because when would you have violated the law? When you took it. But when you took it, your intentions were pure. Then when you became evil, evil bird torturer, you weren't doing the action anymore, right? So the intention and action are both necessary, and they're necessary simultaneously. They need to be simultaneous. Since they happen at different points, you don't violate the law. What do you violate? The assay? It's bitl assay to not send the mother away. To hold on to it and then eat it is a bitl assay. So it's possible to fulfill, right? If you would send it away, you would fulfill the assay without having violated the law, right? So Tosvos makes it, Tosfos here says it's possible to have the asay be independent from the los asay. However, it's a bit of a mixed bag here, right? On the one hand, they can be independent. On the other hand, what's his scenario for fulfilling the asay? What would like the chinuch have said? Or what's a scenario where there's an asay of shiloh came without the lav? I mean, you could say just like you send it away before the lav, you know. Maybe he wouldn't like that because the lav is still there, potentially. But you definitely can fulfill the assay. There are ways of fulfilling the assay without the lav being present, at least arguably. So on the one hand, he has a pretty... He does say that there is an independent scenario where you can do the assay without the lav. On the other hand, he doesn't want to talk about that scenario of first coming upon the just sending it away in the first place. It sounds like he thinks that maybe the assay only exists after the lav, or after you've picked up the cane. So fine, a bit of a mixed bag here in Tosfos. Look now at Yesod Mora, which is the philosophical text of the Ibn Ezra. So he says, a bit of a different context, but he mentions Arichus Yamim Lemishloach Hakein, the reason why you get lengthy days for doing Shlochein, Lo Bavor Lekichas Habanim, Kehi Rishus. Then he gets into the details more. So he has a naturalistic view of Scharva Onesh. Right? Most rewards are like, because if you keep the Torah is good for you, you'll have a flourishing, good natural life. Not that they're supernatural, like that there's someone like counting mitzvos who gives you magical reward. The reward is naturalized, right? That's Ibn Ezra, based on whatever. It's a rationalistic philosophy. But one of the things he says is, for taking the, he says taking the kids, right? And as opposed to the mother, sending away the mother, shiloh hakein, you don't get schar for that per se, because it's rishus. It's optional. So this is an interesting formulation, that the mitzvah is rishus, right? Usually mitzvah means obligation. So what does it mean that a mitzvah is rishus? So we have the Ibn Ezra's formulation here, and a couple other formulations that flesh this out a little bit. So let's look at 16, Avnei Nezer, again in a different context, trying to prove women's in sukkah, of all things. Anyway, save that as a Dvar Torah for sukkah's time. But anyways, the third line, a bit in Af she'ein chiyuv l'shiluach ha'em rakim who wrote a little abanim avalim wrote a le'aniach ha'em v'abanim v'leilech lo mutter. So he says he has a formulation here that it's situational, and this will be one of the main positions that we'll see. If you want to take the chicks or the eggs, then you have a chiyuv, then you have an obligation. If you don't want to take the chicks, if you're not interested in an omelet or chicken, and you just happen to see a nest, there's no chiyuv. And the chiyuv is only, it's situational. It's only a chiyuv if you actually want to go down a certain path. We can compare this actually very closely to the mitzvah of shechita. There's a mitzvah of the shecht. Most money mitzvahs count that. So I should run around being like, okay, what animals can I shecht? I want to shecht a lot of animals to get a lot of mitzvahs. No, that doesn't work that way, right? If you need to eat an animal, and then you need a shechta, then you have a mitzvah. To just go around shechting animals to rack up mitzvah points, it doesn't work that way. All right, so similar idea here. There's no mitzvah to go around doing shiluch hakein. The mitzvah is, if you want to take the chicks or the baby or the eggs, then you have a mitzvah shiluch hakein. So it is, in this formulation, it is a chiyuv, but it's a situational chiyuv, right? Whereas Ibn Ezra said rishus, which might be something different. Yeah.
There's like a bunch of situational chiyuvim, right? Like also to get divorced. Like there's mm-hmm. no mitzvah to go around like getting divorced. You could fulfill like gittin. Or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting divorced, maybe getting married, right? Not everyone counts kiddushin right. as a mitzvah. Some say it's a situational mitzvah, although that's complicated in certain ways. Yeah, there's a handful of these, right? So get is one of them, right? If someone's getting divorced, it should be through the process of the Torah, b'chas lo sefer krisos, right? Written document, etc. So that's what it sounds like the Avnei Nezer are saying, or tzitzis. Different ways of understanding tzitzis. One way of understanding it is there's no mitzvah to wear tzitzis. If someone's wearing a four-corner garment and would otherwise have a chiyuv in tzitzis, then you have the chiyuv in tzitzis. So that's the Avnei Nezer's formulation. The Minchas Shlomo, or Shlomo Zalman Arbach, says, also in a different context, this is like people like throwing this out as an example. He says, Mimitzvah shiluach hakein, dinaktinan de'enzo mitzvah chiyuvis. It's not an obligatory mitzvah. For us, the cane mutter lo leilich ledarko. You see the cane, you can go walk. You know, go keep going. Ignore it. V'lo lasos klum mikol makom pashadush im ra'a cane v'shilach as a tzipor v'lach as a beitzim v'lishum kavanas mitzvah demistabros lo kiyem v'kach mitzvah shilach cane. So that's sort of a secondary point. You need to have kavana. You need to intend to do the mitzvah. But what he says explicitly is it's not a mitzvah chiyuvis. It's rather a mitzvah kiyumis. Right? You're not obligated to go around doing shlochein, but it's if you do, you fulfill the mitzvah. Right? So this may be what rishus means. Rishus means it's an option, meaning if you do it, you fulfill a mitzvah. If you don't do it, no skin off your back.
Living in
Eretz Yisrael, possibly, right? That's different views on that. It's a whole controversy in its own right. But yeah, that may be something. It's a mitzvah kiyumis, not a mitzvah chiyuvis. Yeah, so there are a couple of different models here. When we say reshus, does it mean situational chiyuv? Does it mean it's a mitzvah kiyum, it's not a mitzvah chiyuvis? And let's look at the Sefer HaMikna. Im kein havi kiddushin mitzvah, kimo mitzvah shchita v'afreshes truma v'shiloch hakein. He has a nice grouping of these, right? Kiddushin, he throws in shchita and truma, right? Do you need to take off truma? Let's say you don't have fruit. So then there's no mitzvah truma. Or whatever truma is chayiv on at whatever level. Deino mitzvah ala shchita ala freshes truma. There's no mitzvah to shecht or to separate truma. Ela im rotze le'echol. If you want to eat, aser below shchita below afresha. Right? It's a situational obligation. Mechim yishloach hakein. Deino mitzvah lishloach. Ela rotze lika chabanim. Ela rotze lika chabanim. If you want to take the chicks, then you need to send away the mother bird. There's no mitzvah otherwise. So this is important, right? Important background. For understanding this mitzvah, is it a chiyuv or not, right? In terms of the nature of the mitzvah itself, right? So now, what would we say for the Rambam? The Rambam doesn't have a passage where he talks about it explicitly, but what would, for the Rambam, the question doesn't even get off the ground, right? For the Rambam, there's no mitzvah, right? So we have a range of views here, right? We have the idea that there's no positive mitzvah, good thing of Shiloh HaKein. It's damage control, that's the Rambam. There's the possibility that it's Rishus, which might mean one of two things. It might mean it's a situational chiyuv. It really is a chiyuv, but only under certain circumstances. Or it might just be a mitzvah kiyumis. There's never an obligation to do it. And, of course, you could have the view, and we'll see some who do, that it actually is a chiyuv. You wake up in the morning, or maybe not quite that strong, but you come across, you come across a nest, you have a chiyuv. You have a chiyuv to do it, regardless of what you want, right? It's like the nest itself is mechayiv. And maybe even that you should try to seek out such things. Okay, let's try to get through one more section here, a bit over a page, before we break. And then I guess tomorrow we'll finish off with some of the shitos here. So another related question, and this helps get at the idea of what the nature of the mitzvah is do you say a bracha, right? For those of us who have been fulfilled the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein, I don't know if that's anyone, but did we say a bracha when we did it? Probably standard practice is not to, but it's machlokes. So let's look at some of the opinions here. The Rashba in a couple places discusses what do you say a bracha on, what don't you say a bracha on. He's like sort of the mar, the shmeitza. He's the one who wrote the most on this, so two different tshuvos of his. First, number 19 here, skipping to the bottom. V'chein kol mitzvah shehi ba'a mitoch aveira, gonna show us exhale, v'chazaris ribis, shotzivan u'ligzol kudei lahashiv, v'ligach hazaim. So same with Shiloh HaKein, a mitzvah that comes out of an avera, there's no bracha, right? So chazaras ribis, right? It's prohibited to charge interest. If you do, you're supposed to pay it back. So there's a mitzvah to pay it back, you don't say a bracha on that mitzvah. Why? Because it comes out of a lot. It's sort of not so nice. And elsewhere, the Shud Rashba, the underlying part of Mikol Mako, Mashin is stopping lan, Mimivarchim, Allah say, Tainu Allah Shiloh, O Al Halav. Right, so this whole tshuva is about whether you say a bracha on Shiloh HaKein or not. He has a couple of things he discusses. But he says, at the end of the day, the question here is, what's the primary aspect of the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein? This gets back to the Rambam a bit. Is it primarily a positive commandment? Send away the mother bird. Don't mess up. If you do, that's a lav. Or is it primarily a lav? Don't mess up. Don't take them together. If you do, then fix it with a Shiloh HaKein. That's sort of like the Rambam. And he says, "Vayanira Yoser Shahaylo Levarich Ala Lav Ripneshu Iker HaMitzvah." The primary aspect of this mitzvah is the lav. The Shleach Shalach Eino Ela Nitak Halav Shem Avar VeLakach Nitko Hakasav Lase. The Shleach Shalach. The whole lase is only if you messed it up, then you should fix it, right? So he really sounds like he's embracing the Rambam's view here. Mikol Makom Eino Mevarich Ela Shetzivanu LeShaleach Shanacha Haynu Hashiluach Mevarichem Eino Mevarichem Ela Al. And we never have a bracha on a lav, right? Well, there are some exceptions that he gets into a little bit, Birchas Erison being one of them. But whatever, leaving that aside, normally we don't make a bracha on a lav. You say a bracha on positive commandments, right? That would be interesting to have like bracha parties, like you have like a pork, like a bracha that we don't eat chazer, right? That we don't do brachas on that. Okay, so that's the Rashba here. And even though the two answers he gives are somewhat separable, it sounds like the second thing is the main point, right? That definitely, if you go full Rambam and think that the Aseh is totally subsumed to the lav, this question doesn't get off the ground, right? Why don't you say a bracha? Why would you say a bracha? It's mitigating a lav, right? It's like, yeah, it's yeah. So there's no reason to say a bracha if the primary point is the lav. The source 19 potentially was another path if the Rashba hadn't had this strong view. But let's say he said that the asay is somewhat independent. Still, since it's maybe you could say it's associated with something very negative, you might still say that that's a sufficient reason, although he doesn't spell that out. Okay, other views on the bracha. Rabbeinu Bechaye here says, mitzvahs omen and mitzvahs hamikubalos, meaning they were commanded, we accepted them, they were not rational, per se. V'acham is al tiknu bracha v'kulan v'lo tiknu b'zeh. V'acham you have brachas with most mitzvahs, not by this one. Why? V'fisha ein a mitzvah michuyeves k'mo shar mitzvos. V'einu chayev v'chazer achar rabbi mechuban el k'shiyaz damin lo. It's not a chiyav, right? It's not, there's no obligation to do shiloh hakein. Again, it's a kiyam, right? You don't need to go around tracking it down, as we saw in our sugya, but that's going to get more complicated. So that's Rabbeinu Bechaye, that fits with the approach that we saw, that it's a mitzvah kiyumis rather than a mitzvah chiyuvis. And now the rokeach, kol mitzvah shein chukos ugzera, tzarech levarech, shiloh hakein, v'reish zagez u'shar matnos kivuna. So he makes the point, the main point here he's making is that rational mitzvahs that non-Jews would keep, because it's rational, like, I don't know, kibud av ha'em. You don't say a bracha on that, because you don't need to be Jewish to do kibud av ha'em. It's rational. You don't need to be commanded. It's sort of, you know, you do it anyways. Mitzvahs that are not obvious, that you need to be commanded, you do say a bracha, like shiloh hakein. Wait a second. So that means that you say a bracha on shiloh hakein, according to the rokeach. So that's an important shita against what we saw in the Rashba. And against the Me'iri in source 23 here, he says, on his list of mitzvahs, now brachos is shiloh hakein. And in terms of psak, right, again, this is very practical. If you don't finish the sugya between today and tomorrow, you run into a shiloh hakein situation, you need to know this. So source 24, the shiuri bracha, discussing whether it's a bracha or not, he goes through some shitos one way and the other, a couple of opinions we didn't mention. At the bottom line, literally, umikol makom, le'inyan dina, what's the halacha? Pshita diniktinan shelo levarech. We take the approach not to say a bracha. Kama the ika kamar avasa shekasu beferish imevarechim. This is a classic Hilchos Brachos. We say Safik Brachos Lahakel, right? When in doubt, do without for Brachos. And why that's true is a whole other shir. But he says, since it's a machlokes, a major shitos on both sides, we don't say a bracha. So that's a way of not answering the fundamental question, right? Our practice not to say a bracha might just be because there's a machlokes, not because we paskin one way or the other. So that's somewhat open. But what we saw was what one could say is whether one says a bracha or not really depends on the nature of the mitzvah, right? And some people explicitly tie this. Like the Rashba gives a full Rambam reasoning. You don't need a bracha because it's really an adjunct. It's a damage mitigation on the los ase. Or the opinion that says it's a mitzvah kiyumis, not a mitzvah chiyuvis, so there's no bracha. On the other hand, someone who thinks it is a real chiyuv, so then why wouldn't there be a bracha? Right, of course. You're going to go out and, you know, and save the birds or something like that. That's a mitzvah. You should say a bracha on it. Why wouldn't you? So it could be that these are all connected, right? The nature of the mitzvah, whether you say a bracha or not, and whether you should go and try to do shiloh hakein are all connected. And I think we'll take questions now. Next time, we'll look at explicitly at some of the shitos that talk on both sides of this issue, whether to do shiloh hakein or not. Yeah.
Is there any discussion not to make a bracha because you're not really in control of the outcome, like the bur mitzvah's not
clean? I think I saw that somewhere, but it's I don't have it here on the sheet. But yeah, that would be another solution, right? That's one of the reasons why generally the mitzvah is made out of lachavero, right? Like tzedakah, we don't make a bracha on tzedakah. One of the reasons is, well, if you offer the person tzedakah and they don't take it, that was a bracha levatala. There are other answers given too. It'd be really awkward being one of them. But less awkward with the bird, but you do have the issue of, right, you try to send the bird away, but it runs away first or something before you can send it away. That may be another issue, but that's obviously that's not what these mefarshim are saying. They're all taking clear views based on the nature of the mitzvah. Yeah, Rina.
Okay, so this is a comment, not a question. Just thought it was like a interesting story. So in the book, The Year of Living Biblically by Jacobs, author Jacobs, there's basically like a man who tries to live biblically for a year. And one of the things he does in the book is he goes and he finds like some religious Orthodox Jew that like, if you pay him, then you can do the mitzvah of shiloh hakein. Mm-hmm. And then he says that a lot of people that do this mitzvah, like they have like, you know, they're able to, I don't know what, like have children if they weren't able to have children. So he does this. And I thought it was like, it's a true story. So there's really some religious man out there in the New York area who like, if you pay him, you can do this mitzvah.
There's more than one. There are many out there, but we'll get to that tomorrow when we get into some of the more contemporary shitos. Any other questions or thoughts? Okay, so we'll pick up tomorrow, and we'll let people decide whether it's better to do this at the end of Seder for the Shir or to try to do it earlier and then do Seder after. We'll let that be decided by the power.